Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me tonight, Corey Waldron and Jack Manuel. What's up, fellas?
What up, guys? We've got the Neapolitan squad, the top. They've got the chocolate, we've got the vanilla, we've got the strawberry. We're ready to go with this shit.
Wow. Load up the clip. We're here.
We're talking Clippers today, number 13 in our rankings. You know, before we talk about the rankings, we'll talk about the Clippers from last year. And this was the last time we're ever going to see the Clippers big three, Lob City. You know, Chris Paul is gone. But what were your thoughts about the Clippers from last season?
Look, it was just success and then no success. It was sort of like Groundhog Day for the third or fourth time for the Clippers. You know, they had a great season when it came to the win-loss record. You know, finished fourth, 51-31 record. People were hyping them up as a legitimate challenger to the Warriors earlier in the season. I'm not sure if you guys remember. It's been obviously quite a while now, almost a year to the day. They went 14-2 to open the season. But as the Clippers tend to do, they just peaked far too early. They had the injuries to CP3, you know, Blake Griffin at certain stages. You know, DeAndre was one of the only ones from the big three who was actually able to maintain his health. So hopefully out of us three, we can all stay healthy for the rest of this podcast, unlike the Clippers. But yeah, yet again, they failed to produce when it mattered in the playoffs when, you know, your boy, Nicky boy, ISO Joe came out and he iced them up as he does. And another season of missed chances for the Clippers.
Yeah, I'm currently looking at grave sites in L.A. So I put a tombstone to rest in peace to Lob City. You know, there's a lot of good candidates. You know, they were good last year. They were a fourth seed. You know, their championship window was probably a couple of years ago when they blew that 3-1 lead to the Houston Rockets. The Clippers' health has always been an issue. I remember ESPN posted a stat. It was like 4 out of the 5 years they made the playoffs, they were missing a starter, or like at least one starter. We know Chris Paul had a couple times where he had, you know, a bone in his hand broke. He had pulled hamstring. Blake Griffin, you know, this was a team that, you know, has always been right on that, you know, contender line border. And, you know, last year was no different. They were right in the middle of the pack in the West, just not good enough to beat those upper West teams.
Yeah, it's like a different year, same show for the Clippers. You know, a 50-win season, they have another top five offense. You know, things are looking pretty good. And like you said, an injury going into the playoffs. Can you think of a more disappointing, successful regular season team
of
recent time?
Not in this sport.
No, not in the team, not in basketball. I think, Corey, you make a really good point. Like, you know, you can go to probably, you guys are much bigger fans of football, but like, you know, my home sport in Australia, we've got this team in Aussie rules called the Richmond Tigers. They haven't made the finals, which is like the playoffs, for a long time. And now they're enjoying some like some postseason success. But I think they're more likely to win a title this year, funnily enough, than the Clippers are in the next 10 years, that's for sure. But, you know, you'll hear plenty of Clippers insults throughout this podcast, guys. So if you don't want to hear that, there will also be some hopeful things. But, you know, we're not talking about a Nets podcast, so we're probably not going to be as positive. So, but, you know, the Clippers still have there's some interesting moves out there. And, you know, there's still some hope for them for the when it comes to the playoffs anyway, even though they are still in the stacked West.
A couple of teams that come to mind when I think about, like, the Clippers' constant, like, disappointment would be, like, those – I know this is baseball, so people tuning in are going to be, like, you know, boring. The mid-2000 Yankee teams, when they first got A-Rod, they got bounced in the first round for, like, 4 straight years. And, you know, when teams – they had, like, the biggest payroll in baseball. Not that the Clippers have the biggest payroll, but, you know, they have, you know, two bona fide superstars, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, and, you know, Doc Rivers to coach the team. And then – you know, year in and year out, we're talking about, you know, no conference final appearances.
Yeah, it's just so disappointing, especially when they got all these guys together, you know, just everything never really working out and getting over that point. The only, like, other NBA team that really has been really successful in the regular season and not so much in the postseason would probably be the Raptors on the other side. But their expectations aren't quite as high as the Clippers ever were. So
yeah, and I think the Raptors have a little bit more – they're not a team that everyone loves to hate. Like, there's a bit more – I know there's not as much animosity towards the Toronto Raptors. I'm not sure whether it's the fact that they're out, you know, all the way out in Canada and it's snowing all the time and no one really cares because they've got the nice poutine and the Tim Hortons. whether it's just the fact that it's Chris Paul and Doc Rivers, two like NBA personalities that people love to hate. But yeah, that's a really apt comparison. But you know, the Raptors are funnily enough one of my second favorite teams. But that's because how can we not love the Raptors? Like,
I can't. There's just not. I don't know. I'm the Grinch. I'm anti-Raptors. I don't know.
I don't love the Raptors either.
Never. Yeah, they've always to me been on that overrated scale. Like obviously in the East, they've been solid, but I don't know. I just have no. In the playoffs, they never show up, and they almost lose to a 7 seed or an 8 seed every year.
But Drake Knight guys, come on! What are the OVO Raptors jerseys? They are sick. They are slick as.
They are.
Nice. They are. But I also appreciated Drake when you know the Nets beat the Raptors in the playoffs, and they had some really good memes on like, "Hold on, we're going home."
Hey, yeah. Drake and memes go hand in hand. It's like the crying Jordan meme. Like you can't. And Drake's been laying low lately. So, you know, Dame Lillard's album's out tomorrow, guys. So just a bit of news for the NBA rap fans out there, but. He was on Sway in the morning as well, but you know, I digress. We're here to talk about the Clippers.
Yeah, Clipper talk. Highlight of the Clipper season last year. This is probably tough.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because they had still a relatively successful season, but when it came to the postseason, there weren't a lot of highlights after they were bounced in the first round to the Jazz. But so I'm going with a regular season game where CP3 had an historic night when it came to a statistical effort. So he posted a ridiculous 20-20 game, so 20 points, 20 assists with zero turnovers. So first time that's ever happened since the turnovers were first recorded as a statistic in 1977.
And it kind of just – that game alone just kind of gives you an idea what type of player Chris Paul is.
Yeah, and I don't think – and we say it quite a bit, Nick, and I've written a few articles about him being a Clippers – one of the Clippers writers for OTG – how valuable, like on research, like I respected him, his talent, but I didn't understand the depths to his talent and the variety and his offensive and defensive capabilities. But like a night like that, just put it in perspective. Like there is no one else in the league that can put up a night like that. Russell Westbrook had an historic season, but James Harden was right behind him, probably by like, I think it was 2 assists in terms of averages. But no one in the NBA could put up a 20-20 night with zero turnovers. Maybe Team Lonzo and LaVar will speak it into existence next year. I doubt it, but CP3 is certainly, he's the point god for a reason.
Yeah, for highlights of for the season or, you know, highlight night that sticks out, without question, Jack, that 20-for-20 zero turnover night sticks out. You know, that was the first time in my lifetime that I recall actually seeing that happen. You know, you just don't see numbers like that. It was as if I was playing 2K on pro and I was just being selfish and trying to get 20-20.
Yeah.
You just don't see that kind of stuff translate over into real life. And no, like you said, I mean, that's the point guard right there. The guy is incredible. You know, to anyone who throws shade and say he's not a top 3 point guard in the league, you know, you might as well just don't listen to me ever talk again because you're a fool. Now, until Chris Paul digresses incredibly, until he falls off the planet, this guy is a top 5 for sure, and in my opinion, a top 3 point guard. And yep. You know, last year, the highlight would probably be for Clipper fans is just to enjoy, you know, Chris Paul throwing oops DeAndre Jordan and this, you know, Clippers team battle it out.
Where do you guys think he ranks right now at this stage as in terms of point guards in the league? Like, we've got Steph Curry. We're in the era of the greatest point guards ever. We've got Damian Lillard. We've got John Wall. We've got that many great point guards. But, you know, there's still a guy named Russell Westbrook. James Harden played ridiculously at point guard last year. And, of course, Stephen Curry has changed the game with his shooting. Where does Chris Paul rank in terms of point guards right now? Corey, you said top 3. Would you go top 2? Would you say
No, that's too far. He's not top 2 anymore. For me, it'd probably be Curry, Westbrook, and then Chris Paul, and then John Wall is right on the tails of Chris Paul.
John Wall better than Harden?
Well, Harden's now back to being a shooting guard. You know, it was 1 year.
I'd say that as well.
Yeah, I mean, if Harden's still there, then it makes it a lot tougher thing. But I think Corey's right in the sense. I mean, going to next season, I probably have John Wall. I'll probably jump him. Just Chris Paul's getting up there in age, and his production's going to be a little bit down playing with James Harden. So I think John Wall's going to finally hit his prime. We've seen him take some real major steps in his game. But, you know, I agree with Corey in the sense, you know, Steph, Russ, Wall, CP3, he's still in my top 5 until he proves otherwise. you know, he has a terrible season. But, you know, based off of last year, I think one thing about Chris Paul, and it kind of talks about it in that game, you know, the 2020 with zero turnovers, is he does so many things right on the floor, and they ask him to do it all the time. Another guy who actually helped me start the NBA out that previous series, Parth Garadia, you know, he was big on Chris Paul because he always talked about how many times he made the right decision and how many times the Clippers would ask him to do that, and he hardly turned the ball over.
Yeah, he's one of the most efficient, if not efficient, point guards ever. And, you know, researching statistics, like, his win shares are ridiculous. The impact he has on a team as a floor general is unparalleled. There, you know, since probably, like, you know, the days of, like, John Stockton, not many guys can have an impact on their team in so many different ways, whether it be passing, whether it be shooting. He has, and even on the defensive end, he's one of the best stealers in the NBA. He's one of the best one-on-one defenders at the point guard position, despite his size, you know, being under 6 foot. He has such a skill set, and I agree with Corey. Anyone who hates on CP3, you know, hate the player, respect the game.
Yeah, very true. That's a great saying. I guess for me, highlight-wise, I mean, you guys both pick great ones. I'll go with DeAndre. He boosted his free throw percentage. He shot a ridiculous 71% from the field. Obviously, all he does is lay it in and dunk, but still very efficient. I think this will be an interesting season for him playing without Chris Paul. We'll kind of see how good a player he really is.
Yeah, we'll almost get like a preview to what he could have been in Dallas had that gone through. I mean, he probably would have been the guy over there with Mark Cuban. But that whole story is still hilarious to me. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting season ahead for DeAndre Jordan. But, you know, he's probably one of the best rebounders. He's one of the most athletic big men. He's Dwight Howard if Dwight Howard didn't lose his athleticism.
He's got more length and size than Dwight ever did, you know, in terms of, you know, his wingspan and things like that. DeAndre, I think, averaged more rebounds than he did points last season. And he averaged like 12 points a game. So I think it was like 13-plus rebounds. But biggest disappointment for the Clippers last year?
For me, it's all about the playoffs. They fizzled out yet again, and they had a bit of momentum. And they were favored against the Jazz in terms of when you look at the talent on each roster. And Gordon Hayward missed a few games. Yes, Blake Griffin did miss some as well. But to not even progress past the first round for this team after having at least some playoff success, the fact that they couldn't make the finals at all in Chris Paul and that big three's tenure, it was just very disappointing. Real big letdown. And a letdown for me, but my best mate, Magus, back home. Big Clippers fan. Sorry, Magus. We're going to be shitting on him a lot this pod.
Yeah, I think the biggest disappointment has to be the team as an overall. Because no one really, you know, of this core, no one had a real bad season. It'd be hard for me to pick somebody out and say, you know, you were bad. Even though J.J. Redick, I think, slowed down the second half of the year, he wasn't as aggressive offensively. But, you know, like you hit the nail on the head, Jack. You know, this is a team that every year we expect to be battling for that conference finals. And I know a lot of people thought that the Clippers were probably going to be the biggest issue for the Golden State Warriors. And the Warriors made a mockery of any of those kind of statements anytime these two teams got on the court. I mean, granted, the Clippers were never really at full health when they played the Warriors, but there was never a second half with the Clippers even in breathing room of the Warriors.
And Steph Curry has some of his nicest plays ever on the Clippers, and he has a lot of nice plays. So I think, like you guys said, losing in the playoffs and the injuries in the playoff, it kind of was just icing on the cake. You know, this was the final season of what we talked about with this big three, and it kind of just went the way that you kind of expected. Things just didn't go right. They underperformed, and the injuries came through, and it was just a rough year for the Clippers, and now it's finally over, and they kind of start a new era.
New era.
But let's talk ranking. Number 13, what are your thoughts on this ranking? Our OTG writers came up with this. You know, everybody put their votes in about – now it's almost about a month ago. Too high, too low, fair?
Look, I think this one's a little high. The roster turnover was huge. Losing Chris Paul, we're going to say it a million times. That can't be understated. I said in one of my articles about on the Clippers that they could finish as high as fourth in the West. But that's all things going well, and that's all, you know, a few of the teams going around them having some injuries and having lackluster seasons. But at the same time, things could seriously blow up and they could even miss the playoffs. So the range for the Clippers team that could happen, I think is wildly varied, similar to like a Pelicans. Whereas, you know, some of those steadier teams where, you know, their ceiling isn't as high and their basement isn't as low. So for me, it's a little bit high. I'd have them a bit lower, you know, scraping into the playoffs.
For me, this is it's far too high. You know, we're talking about a team like we just mentioned, losing a top five point guard in the league for sure. There's a core that has injuries. You know, they lost a couple of key guys with J.J. Redick, you know, and a couple of role players off the bench. And they're bringing in a couple of guys who I'm not even sure what their fit, which we'll talk about. I think it's about 4 to 5 spaces too high.
Yeah, I think they're more – I would agree with you guys. I don't think maybe 4 spaces, but, you know, maybe more in that, like, 15 range. Like Jack said, kind of just grazing into the playoffs if they do make it. You know, with the roster turnover, losing a player like Chris Paul, you know, the West getting a lot stronger, it's just really a lot of things have to go right for, you know, the Clippers to have a successful season. And when you play in the Western Conference, you don't necessarily have time to get things together. But let's talk additions. You know, we'll talk draft first, get that out of the way. They picked up 2 guys in the second round, Juwan Evans, Sindorius Norwell. What are your thoughts on these guys?
They'll be spending a lot of the time in the G League. And I don't think they'll see a lot of time on any Clippers teams this year, just because the CP3 trade left them so stacked in a way that the Clippers haven't been in so many years. Like, one thing that they've always been lacking is real depth, real bench depth. And they've got that now, acquiring like something like 9 pieces in that CP3 trade. But, you know, injuries can happen. And these guys, if they can perform in the G League, they could, you know, see some sort of value of minutes, but it'll take some sort of miracle on the end of the depth that they have now.
I actually don't agree. I think Thornwell is going to be a stud. I'm a huge fan of Thornwell. For those who don't know, Thornwell played at South Carolina last year, who led him to a Final Four, and he was SEC Player of the Year. He played all 4 years in college, which you don't see often. And, you know, his greatest jump was from his junior year to senior year, where he averaged 21.4 points per game, 7.2 rebounds, while shooting, you know, 39% from 3. He's a 6'5 guard. You know, the one thing that I like is just, you know, I like certain players that actually spend the time to go to college and actually work on their game, because I actually think going into the NBA, he's probably a more ready NBA player than most college players are, just because he has such a bigger body of work. You know, I don't think he's going to get huge minutes. I wouldn't be shocked if he started off in the G League, but Thornwell is a guy that you will see him in a Clippers uniform before the season is over.
Definitely be interesting. Like we mentioned on this pod a million times, second round picks are kind of thrown in the air. They could definitely see minutes if there's injuries or if they, you know, show up in training camp or G League time. But let's get to the juicy stuff. You know, we're going to talk additions first. Obviously, the Chris Paul trade brought back a lot of pieces. You know, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, DeAndre Liggins, and obviously some non-guaranteed guys that they kind of just cut to make the deal work. Out of those guys, actually, let's go through each guy. You know, what are your thoughts on Pat Beverley? What can he bring to this team?
Look, I like him a lot, especially in the defensive end, and especially when it comes to those spot-up threes. He can be a knockdown guy when it comes to that. He'll certainly give you everything on defense. He's no Chris Paul, but he said that in his presser. You know, he's not going to be Chris Paul. He's going to be Pat Beverley. He has a lot of energy, and he gives you 100% when he steps foot on the court. He'll probably play more of an off-ball role with Griffin initiating a lot of the offense, which he has experience with, you know, out in Houston with James Harden doing a lot of that. So he has elite skills in certain areas. You know, he's an all-NBA defensive player as well, I believe last year. So, you know, he's no slouch, but at the same time, he's no CP3.
You know, Patrick Beverley is a lot of things. He's a lot of character. I mean, for most of his time in Houston, if not all of it, he was the heart and soul of that Houston team. There was a clear-cut difference when Pat Beverley was suited up and on the floor compared to when he was hurt on the sideline. It's a guy who doesn't shy away from the top-notch point guards, We know his relationship and his, you know, ongoing, not feud, but the way he goes out guys like Russell Westbrook on the court. He doesn't shy down away from those kind of players, which you like. Of course, he's not a playmaker like CP3. He'll never be that kind of guy. But he's more of like a two guard who guards point guards. And he's a spot up shooter. He's a decent catch and shoot guy. He'll bring a lot of good defensive things to this Clippers team.
Yeah, he's that 3-and-D point guard. You know, he plays off ball and with a player like a James Harden or somebody else who can run the offense. He's definitely in a nice role. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him in Los Angeles. Obviously, Blake's probably going to play some point forward. So I think, you know, Beverly definitely brings some nice energy and toughness. He was probably one of the only Rocket players you saw kind of getting after James Harden last year when the Spurs series, when he kind of wasn't, you know, when things weren't going right for him, just trying to get him going. So definitely won't ever question this guy's effort. But let's talk about Lou Williams. Oh, go ahead, Jack.
No, I was just going to say, Nick, the other day he made a big move on Instagram. And he apparently, with the whole KD gate that's been happening, he had DeAndre Jordan's phone and he took a selfie of himself and logged it onto DeAndre's Instagram and said, "Hi, everybody." And then apparently, like, Blake and DeAndre were all commenting, and Blake and DeAndre's like, "I did not authorize this." And Blake's like, "Let's get rid of this guy already." It was pretty funny, just due to the timing of it all.
I gotta admit, they're one of the funniest. Blake Griffin is a funny guy, for what it's worth. Those guys seem to have a good character over there in LA.
My girlfriend's dad absolutely hates Blake Griffin so much to the fact that, like, as a joke Christmas gift, he bought me 2 Clippers jerseys, like an alternate. Look, I'm not going to hate on the joke because they're nice jerseys. Like, he didn't just get me, like, you know, the ones that you can buy in, like, China or the fake scrub ones. Like, these are, like, legit nice jerseys. So, you know, he's my best friend's favorite player as well. Plus, that whole thing when he was, like, you know, riffing with Drake as well, the whole Cheeto dust thing, that was hilarious. Like, he's got chops. I agree, Corey.
I don't know if you guys ever saw the episode of Broad City with Blake Griffin.
It is hilarious.
Definitely doing some of the strangest things, and he's open to being funny. You definitely can tell he's going to have a personality in, you know, Hollywood later on.
For sure. He's made for Hollywood.
Yeah, for sure. But let's talk about the other guard they picked up that's pretty much the opposite of Patrick Beverley, and that's Lou Williams. No defense, but this dude can light it up in a matter of minutes.
Lou Will. I mean, we mentioned Drake earlier, so we got to give a shout out to Lou Will. He's that perfect replacement for Jamal Crawford. You know, he's younger. He's probably at a better stage of his career right now. You know, he was out in Houston and LA last year. He was vying for the sixth man of the year role. And I reckon he'll probably be in the running for it yet again this year. I'd be surprised if he's not, if he gets the minutes and he stays healthy. You know, the fact he was able to fit in quite well with the Rockets for a number of games after that Lakers trade, and he was probably the Lakers' best player going into that trade. There weren't many, obviously, the competition there wasn't really that fierce. But it shows that he won't really have a problem fitting into this Clippers team. He'll be the guy coming off the bench, and you know, Doc Rivers needs that scoring punch off the bench, and he'll certainly get that from Lou Will.
I just want to say one thing. I don't know why I said this team is 4 to 5 spots higher than that ranking. I just want to, like, back. It's like 2 or 3. I have to clear that up. I'm not sure why I had to go to such extreme leaps.
Takes a big man to admit he's wrong, Corey, so yeah. I respect that.
I mean, I'm also backtracking because I know I picked the team to be a playoff team, and 5 spots back isn't necessarily the playoff in the West. But anyways, back to Lou Will. For sure. I mean, you're losing your bench scorer, your primary guy off the bench in an older Jamal Crawford, and you're getting a guy who's younger and, at this point of his career, a better scorer, probably a better three-point shooter. It's an all-around better player at this point despite his height. Obviously, Lou Will's getting up there in age a little bit, but you can't go wrong with the almost sixth man of the year last year. I mean, this guy balled out on the other L.A. team last year. You know, I'm sure the fans of L.A. will be happy to see him back at Staples Center. You know, Lou Will is one of those guys who on any given night can light it up for 30.
Yeah, Lou's the type of guy where you might flip on a Clippers game and you might see him just checking the game and drop 3 threes in a matter of 1 minute. You know, he can get hot. And, you know, we could have mentioned this before as a disappointment. Jamal Crawford took a step back last year. So I think Lou Williams definitely give them some much-needed bench scoring. But, you know, the defense obviously is always an issue with him. But talking about the other guys they got in this trade, Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, DeAndre Liggins, you know, which of these guys do you think is going to have the biggest impact this season?
Well, I think Sam Decker, just quietly, just because he's got age on his side. He's only 22 years old, I believe. He's a nice young winger that can come off the bench, give them some energy. He's got a skill set where he can, you know, he's a nice cutter, a nice slasher. He's a decent enough shooter. He gives them good energy. But Corey was talking about earlier their draft picks. One thing that Doc Rivers, as a coach, is known to not do is give the young guys minutes. He backs his vets in. So I'm just hoping when it comes to guys like Decker and Montrezl Harrell, that he gives these guys the minutes that they deserve so we can see some development from them. And quietly, DeAndre Liggins, the Cavs version of DeAndre Liggins, I don't understand why they got rid of him, because when they were versing the Warriors on Christmas Day, he was their prime on-ball defender when it came to Steph Curry, and they could have used him in last year's finals. I'm just saying, but yeah, I doubt there's rumors that he might be waived to make room for another piece and cap room, but you know, I'm a guy who's a bit of a fan of Liggins.
It's got to be Sam Decker. I was really critical of the Houston Rockets rotation in the playoffs. Sam Decker got hurt near the end of the season, and he was one of their key core guys. You're talking about a guy who can play the three or the four. He can hit the three. He's just a very scrappy ball player out of Wisconsin. You know, I definitely think of all those guys, he can probably have the biggest impact. You know, I think last year he probably would have helped them in the playoffs more against the Spurs if he actually was in the rotation. Instead, they ran, you know, that seven-man rotation, and they just pretty much ran everybody into the ground. I do think that Sam Decker will be utilized quite well by Doc Rivers off the bench.
Yeah, it's got to be Sam Decker. I mean, he's the only one of the three that I know of that's friends with Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, he's got my choice. But let's talk about another trade. This is a more of a free agent signing, but it was a sign and trade. They picked up Gallinari. You know, that's going to be a big offensive load they expect out of him this season. What are your thoughts on the fit with this team with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan already being there?
3 years too late. No, on the offensive end, I'm a fan. Just in terms of the versatility he gives them, in terms of like he's a baller on offense, but his size and flexibility defensively leaves a lot to be desired. You know, he needs to start using his hands for the right reasons rather than on people's faces. But then again, his teammate Blake could do the same thing. So, you know, maybe he could give him some advice on that. But, you know, when he stops hanging out with Kendall Jenner and maybe actually sees his teammates. But Gallinari is an interesting one. I'm not sure he's worth the lofty 3-year, $65 million contract either. I think they might have paid overs on that. I think the Clippers are trying to stay relevant in LA, in a city where, you know, you're competing for competition in so many different ways. Not only when it comes to the Lakers, but even like teams like the Dodgers and all the hockey teams, and then the fact that it's Hollywood, you know, Universal Studios is always good fun. So, you know, the Gallinari signing, while iffy, makes sense in terms of trying to compete.
It's a joke. I'm living in a nightmare thinking about a lineup that Gallinari has to play the three and has to go against a guy like Kawhi or a guy like Kevin Durant. It was a question. I get it. You needed to add a piece. You know, this is definitely 3 years too late, Jack. That was probably the one thing I agree with from what you just said, is the fact that, you know, if they had Chris Paul, this could have been the small forward they were lacking. They could have played him at the four at times as well. But I just don't see a lineup having much success when you have DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and Gallinari on the floor at once. I think you're giving up way too much defensively. And like you said, you know, Gallinari, he inked this deal, and the first thing he does is break his hand on someone's face playing overseas. It's a fantastic start to the Clippers' tenure. A team that can't stay healthy is already off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, I mean, Gallinari, like you guys had mentioned, you know, Jack, you nailed it on the head when you said this would have been great 3 years ago, because, you know, with this team, and even maybe 3 years ago, I guess the NBA wasn't as small ball oriented, but nowadays, like Corey said, you know, having him have the guard threes, you know, what is he going to do when they play the Warriors, or what is he going to do when they play the Spurs? You know, having to guard a wing defender, Gallinari is not athletic enough. In my opinion, he's probably better off playing the four. So you're going to have to take minutes away from probably one of your three best players. So that's never ideal. So I think that could definitely be some defensive issues. But offensively, he'll give them some much-needed pop. They're going to need somebody to score the ball. They're going to need somebody to make plays. He can deal with the ball in ISO situations. So that'll help. It'll just be kind of finding the right lineup around all these guys. And I think I might have mentioned this before at some point, but I maybe would maybe consider Blake Griffin guarding the threes and Gallinari guarding the fours, depending on the situation.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Nick, about the lineups that Doc's going to have to implement. You know, a lot of people have said as soon as he was signed that the best lineups he would be in would be either Blake playing at the three or Blake playing at a small ball five. And without DeAndre, because with DeAndre there, he's going to have his hands full. You know, because there's no way that, like you guys are saying, he's going to be able to defend the perimeter at all. His size as well, being like a 6'10 guy, without the most, you know, versatility, he's not very quick on his feet as well. A lot of guys will get by him. I think what they do is if they compare him with some of the bench units, like a Willie Reed or a Montrezl Harrell, I like that a bit more. Even a Sam Decker, playing alongside a Sam Decker, who has a bit more energy on both ends of the floor. I think it could work a little bit. But Doc's going to have his hands full in training camp, which is coming up very soon.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And Corey and I have talked about this on some other preview pods. Is some of these teams are electing to go with the two bigs in their lineup and not able to really shoot the three ball. You know, Blake has improved his jump shot, but he's not definitely a lockdown three-point shooter. And DeAndre can't shoot a lick. So I think definitely spacing could be an issue, possibly depending on who they play at, you know, the point guard position. But let's talk signings. Milos Teodosic from international player, and they picked up Willie Reed, who you mentioned, Jack. What are your thoughts on these two?
My man Milos. The man's a myth, but he's at the same time, he's a great addition to this roster. He's commonly referred to as one of the best European players going around. I mean, Luka Doncic will now have something to say about that. And he does one thing Luka Doncic has that Teodosic doesn't is a youth. You know, he's pushing, I think he might be early 30s now, if not late 20s. But he is an absolute beast on the offensive end. He might keep, you know, Lob City 2.0 in back in action through his passing. He's a great three-point shooter. And I think his addition and his relationship with Patrick Beverley off the court when he played in Greece at Olympiakos is pretty cool. And just for a funny story, back in the day when Teodosic was still in Eurohoops and Beverley was with the Rockets, he would use the moniker of Milos Teodosic at hotels to sort of like as his ghost name so people wouldn't know who he was. So now he's going to have to figure out a new name, Patrick Beverley. Maybe, I don't know, Milos Teodosic is hard enough to say as it is. So I don't know what he'd do now.
He'll be a nice addition. I think, you know, you need somebody who can play the point guard position on this team. And, you know, they're going to expect Milos, who it makes me want to say Migos every time I see his name. I'm not sure why I'm correlating these two names.
T-shirt.
You know, but over in Europe, the one thing, my only concern is just the fact that over in Europe, obviously, this is a guy who's used to playing, you know, no more than, you know, 30 games in a year. And he's going to be asked to play, you know, 82 games. So how his body holds up will be one question. But, I mean, this is a guy who averaged 16.1 points per game last year with almost 7 assists, shooting, you know, 38% from 3 and 44% from the field. This is definitely a guy who can shoot the ball a little bit. I'm not sure how good of a defender he is because I haven't much – all the highlights I watch is just him scoring.
He's pretty trash.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. He'll fit in next to Gallinari. That perfectly won't.
That lineup, God.
I don't think there's enough Patrick Beverleys on this roster to guard, especially because they have Lou Williams off the bench. This is questionable so far. I like it.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like Jack said, 30-year-old guy and not a great defender. Athletically, he's nothing special. So defending NBA players is definitely going to be some adjustment. We always know the international guys, when they come over, they need some time to adjust. If, you know, you could combine Milos, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams all together in one player, you might have a Chris Paul replacement. But in terms of any of these guys really replacing Chris Paul, it's not going to happen. They all can do a little bit of what he could do, but none of them can really have the full package.
I don't think anyone can. That's the thing. Like,
Or at least someone close, you know, something at least to give you some hope. But I think the fact that, you know, they have three guys and there's not even a guarantee that they're all going to produce what Chris Paul produced by himself.
I think the biggest guarantee we've all come down to is that Patrick Beverley is going to give you the most. He's a proven commodity. Lou Will is a proven commodity off the bench. Corey makes a very good point about the Euro guys being able to produce. I think one thing that Milos will have going for him is that he won't be asked to do a lot because he won't be playing a lot with the starting units. So he can ease his way in at the start of the year and Doc can ease him in a little bit rather than, you know, throwing him in all guns blazing into that starting unit. So he can sort of get his feel for the NBA. And then come, you know, 10, 20 games is when he should be starting to peak. That's what I think anyway, but I'm not Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to definitely be some type of guard by committee. And, you know, some of these guys all, you know, with all the roster turnover, we don't really know what the rotation is going to look like until about 20 or 30 games into the season. So, but let's talk departures. You know, let's start with Chris Paul. Obviously, losing a player like Chris Paul, we've mentioned a ton already. But what's going to be the biggest thing they lose from Chris Paul?
Leadership and wins. He's one of the from memory, I wrote this article quite a while ago now, probably a month or two, but I think he was number one or number two all time for win shares, and I think that was behind Michael Jordan. So he has more of an impact than any other player when it comes to impacting his team's wins. He, like we mentioned, he's the point guard for a reason. So I think the fact that his leadership and his presence to run the floor and to impact his team in a winning capacity is what they're going to miss the most. And Clippers' loss is the Rockets' gain.
You know, I mean, that's a really good statement. Clippers' loss, Rockets' gain. what they're going to lose is the fact that they're losing a playmaker. They're losing a guy who can orchestrate an offense on any given night. You know, if Milos is coming off the bench, you know, this starting lineup doesn't have really a point guard that can create for others. And, I mean, God help us all if Austin Rivers is in charge of making other people, you know, better on offense. Because as of right now, you know, we'll talk about the starting lineup in a few minutes. You know, I'm besides Blake Griffin, you know, who has become, you know, a phenomenal all-around player, you know, with the jump shot, with the playmaking abilities. You know, he had a couple triple-doubles a couple years ago in the playoffs, and in the regular season, he managed to, you know, scrap up a couple. Because the guy has become a very complete ball player. But, you know, your power forward can only be so much of a playmaker for you. You really need a guard to do it. And this team is losing the best guard of all guards in the last probably 15 years to playmake.
Yeah, it's definitely – you're going to be losing a ton of stuff with Chris Paul. They also lost another guard in this offseason. They lost J.J. Redick. Thoughts on losing him? You know, obviously, I think the easy thing is you know, the three-point shooting. And they really didn't replace it. Gallinari is a good three-point shooter. But in terms of what they're going to ask him to do, they're going to want Gallinari to score a little bit more in ISO situations, where J.J. Redick's job was pretty much just space the floor and run around and get off screens and find open space to get yourself off some good shots.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly, Nick. But one thing I will add, he has probably the best hair in the NBA behind Gordon Hayward. Is there a man in the NBA that has a better hairstyle? I'm liking Jimmy Butler's and Dwayne Wade's new cornrows and Kawhi Leonard's for that as well. But for me, J.J. Redick and Gordon Hayward have the
I'll give you a dark horse. Dark horse, Nets rookie Jared Allen with the afro.
Oh, yes, the fro. The fro is very nice. I'm a big – old school hairstyles, you know, are always a must, except for the mullet. So if we see the mullet in the NBA – we know it's over. We're back in, like, the 70s, 80s.
You know, what do you think of JaVale McGee's little tail that he has sometimes?
Oh, the rat tail?
Yeah.
That's bad.
It's late here. And I feel like I need to go to the bathroom even.
But talking more departures, they also lost Lou Amabute, Raymond Felton, Mo Spates, Brandon Bass, Jamal Crawford. Out of all those guys, who's going to be the biggest loss?
Look, you look at those names, you immediately say Mbamute because he was a starter for the Clippers last year. He improved on the three-point end. He was a defensive stopper, which they haven't really replaced. They replaced him with basically Gallinari, who is the opposite version of a player of what Luke Mbamute is. But I didn't, in terms of their veteran depth that they lost, Felton was a nice piece, but he won't be missed too much due to the addition of Taya Dosic. Spates, while inconsistent, had some really nice games throughout the season and had some really good energy and was a nice locker room presence. And Brandon Bass was just one of Doc's guys from Boston, so he won't be missed at all.
I think it's got to be a Balamute. And I don't think this, you know, if we had did this podcast a week ago, it probably would have been something else. But, you know, thinking about the defense, they're going to miss him as a defender more than anything.
And how much better did, like, Houston get getting Mbamute and CP3 on the defensive end?
And that's they got P.J. Tucker, too.
And P.J. Tucker. Like, their defense was one thing that really lacked last season. They were lights out when it came to shooting. Their offensive rating and efficiency was through the roof. But they've now addressed a significant, not weakness, they weren't terrible from that end, surprisingly. But now they've got a much better balance. It's going to be scary. I'm all in on the Rockets, and I'm hoping on that. I'm on that preview pod. But if not, I'm gonna you'll hook me up, Nick.
Yeah, I think I can hook you up. I might know somebody.
Yeah, so that's my guy for the miss. I just think defensively, you're definitely going to miss that because I don't.
And not only as an on-ball defender, like you're saying, Corey, but as like a versatile defender, you know, that's going to defend multiple positions, kind of give you that guy. And I think he played a good chunk of games compared to some of the other Clipper starters.
Yeah, and he had turned into a 3-and-D wing player. You know, he obviously wasn't a small forward that they really needed, but he was at least better than what they had in the past.
Yeah, he definitely got a lot better too last year. I think the three-point shooting was a surprise, and that'll be the intriguing thing if he can kind of keep that, you know, that pace up that he shot last season. But moving on from the busy offseason the Clippers had, let's talk starters. Who's starting on opening night for the Clippers? This is probably one of the tougher ones we've had to deal with for a team that we expect to be in the playoff race.
Yeah, it's odd just because of the turnover. I think we've mentioned that before, but I think the likely starters will come opening night will be Beverly, Rivers, Gallinari, Blake, and Jordan. And one asterisk I will put on is Blake due to his health. So I'm not sure come opening night that Blake will be at the four, but you know, for the majority of the season, we're going to see Blake at the four. And if that's the case, they may have to start Sam Decker at the three, move Gallinari to the four. So, and even, you know, who knows, they might experiment with Austin Rivers coming off the bench, sort of leading that unit. So there's a lot of things, a lot of balls that Doc Rivers has to juggle. And I think he's going to have his most pivotal coaching year in his career. And that's saying something.
It will be a tell-all year for Doc Rivers.
Is he under the most pressure of any coach in the NBA right now? I've been listening to a few podcasts, and they've got him under as much pressure as like an Alvin Gentry, as a Fred Hoiberg, as a Stan Van Gundy. Like, I can't help but like sort of lean towards believing them.
I would think so. I mean, you had all these high expectations for the last 5 years, and you couldn't make it to the Western Conference Finals. The one ring you had is because you were not gifted, but you were granted, or not even granted, you got lucky and you were able to get that big three with Rondo as like a mini big four in, you know, retrospect, with Kendrick Perkins even. I mean, you know, that and think about it, they only won one title with that roster. Only one. Yeah. I think there's a lot on the line. I think a part of it, maybe not his legacy to a degree, but for me, you know, this is a coach who has had a boatload of talent and has one ring to show for it.
Yeah, and there was some talk this offseason about Doc possibly leaving and going to another team. I think Orlando was mentioned or something like that. But it's definitely going to be an interesting season for the Clippers and Doc Rivers. And I think, you know, I've mentioned this before in another pod, is there was an offer on the table at some point that the main piece was Austin Rivers going to New York and the Clippers would have picked up Carmelo Anthony. So we don't know the full details, but that was, you know, the main scope of the trade, and Doc turned it down. And, you know, that one could have really hurt. Not to say that the Clippers would have added Melo and went to the finals, but you still want to have the best possible team that you can put on the floor to compete, especially if it's the last year you have Chris Paul.
Well, and we've also heard, I heard the same thing off that rumor, that in particular is what set Chris Paul over the top. But that was a big reason why he walked away.
Makes
that
sense.
That rumor was very strong, and it does make a lot of sense. But, I mean, Would you trade your own son, Nicholas, if you were the coach of an NBA team? It'd be pretty hard, but I get it. You have to separate that when you're in a professional context. But, you know, you want what's best for you.
Put yourself in that situation in the first place. You know, what I try to always do to keep myself out of trouble is I just don't put myself in bad situations. And that's just asking for trouble. Even if he's on your team, you know, you draw him up a play for the last shot, he gets double teamed, take the shot, and you defend him. And you're going to take heat, and you know, the players you coach might not be too happy about it. And then people are obviously always going to say Austin Rivers getting extra treatment, even though I believe Austin and Doc do not have a great relationship from what I've heard. Yeah. So, but starter wise, back to the topic, I'm going to go with Patrick Beverley. I think you're right. I think Austin Rivers starts, and it's because of, you know, Doc Rivers being able to say, you know, he's been here, he knows what I want to do on offense. And the fact that Patrick Beverley's not a true point guard, so they need somebody who's going to try to make some plays. Gallinari, Blake, DeAndre.
Yeah, I didn't even say my starting five, but it's the same. It's okay. It's the same exact thing. You know, I think Austin Rivers has to start. You're going to obviously start, Gallinari, Blake, and DeAndre. And then Patrick Beverley's got to be out there for defensive purposes.
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting lineup. We'll see what happens. A lot this season depends on Blake and what he can kind of do as that lead man. And, you know, Jack wrote an article about it over the summer. They gave a lot of money, and now it's time for, you know, to come perform.
Damn straight.
So, but let's talk breakout starter. Who do you got having a big season in the starting lineup? It's a pretty easy choice for me.
It's easy enough, but I'm gonna be different, and I'm going to go a guy that sort of has to be a breakout starter for them if they want to be successful. And it's a guy that we've given a lot of hate to, and it's Danilo Gallinari. As I mentioned, he gives them offensive versatility and some stats. I know you boys love your stats. He was in the 97th percentile among all players in half-court offense per possession last season, including being in the 76th percentile in ISO situations and 95th percentile in pick and rolls. So he can flat out score. And I think if Griffin can, you know, initiate some of that pick and roll, that 3-4 pick and roll could be, you know, a bit of an offensive weapon if Doc can get Danilo involved and use his strengths to the most of his ability and try and hide his weaknesses as much as possible by whether that's adding in defenders around him or putting him with units that are flat out offense for a few minutes, you know, and then taking them off the floor and then putting in some more defensive-minded lineups. It'll be interesting, but I think he has to have a big season, so that's why he's my breakout starter.
I'm glad we don't have the so far the same people. I'm going with DeAndre Jordan. I just think, you know, DeAndre wanted to leave L.A. to begin with because he wanted a bigger role within an offense. He wanted to be the vocal point. He wanted to have a ton of touches. You know, last year he only had 7 touches. He only averaged 7 field goals a game. I mean, this guy likely he can probably get, you know, right around 11, 12 possibly. You know, I'm not saying they're going to be jump shots. They're probably going to be right around the basket, hopefully maybe more oops or dunks. But he's definitely going to have the opportunity to be more of a focal point inside this offense. I wouldn't be surprised if Blake did a lot to try and get DeAndre some easy looks by just, you know, a couple dish offs or whatever. But I think DeAndre has a big opportunity here to maybe average 15 and 15 next year.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys to go with, but for me, I'm going to go with Blake because I mean, he's the guy. He's healthy. He's the one guy on this team that can kind of eat up some of the impact that Chris Paul had because he's so talented. And like you mentioned earlier, Corey, his all around game has improved a lot. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do as this main cog and if he can live up to the hype. But I think he will. I really like Blake's game. And like Corey actually mentioned, the triple-doubles in the postseason. That postseason, Blake was going off, and he was, you know, looking like one of the better players in the league. And then all of a sudden, just injuries hit, and he hasn't been the same since.
Yeah, offensively, he has the best offensive skill set for a big man in the NBA almost. He's not amazing on the defensive end. He's active enough there, but he's one of the best passing big men with Jokic, Draymond. He's in the probably top 5 there for power forward and centers. Corey, I think, mentioned his spot-up shooting. He's become a lot more reliable from that end. You don't want him stepping out from 30 feet necessarily, but that could be a skill that he's been working on. And, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to become a bit of a threat from there. Not necessarily like a a 40% guy, but, you know, 35, the league average, I wouldn't put it past him. He's lost, Corey, I think, may have mentioned, he lost some of that hop, that athleticism that we've come to know from Blake, you know, the Lob City Blake. But at the same time, he's got the offensive versatility. He's got the skill set enough to that I don't think it's going to make that much of an impact on him, especially now that he's going to be a bit more of a playmaking role.
Yeah, very true. And I think he's kind of he's just grown so much from when he was a rookie. But let's talk bench breakout player. Who you got breaking out off the bench?
I got the deck man, Sam Dekker. I mentioned earlier he's got some nice slashing defensive and offensive qualities. I hope Doc uses him and he can mold him into a nice wing in this new era of Clippers basketball. Like, they haven't had like a decent wing, let alone two of them, let alone a young one that can actually develop as well. You know, they need to start developing young talent, the franchise. And, you know, there's no better place to start than with this guy. And he'll get some time alongside Wesley Johnson off the bench at the three. But, you know, I'm hoping Doc chooses to allocate the minutes more to the young talent than to Wesley Johnson, who we already know what we're going to get from him. Whereas Sam Dekker has, we like to mention, the ceiling. His ceiling hasn't been reached yet. His potential hasn't been reached yet. This year is the start of reaching that potential.
I'm rolling with Lou Williams. You know, there's the fact that that bench unit could be slightly rough, I think, offensively, in terms that Lou Williams would probably have to be the kind of guy he was in L.A., on the Lakers, the other L.A. team. Yeah, I think he's going to have to go out there and get buckets. And I think Doc will let him kind of have like that Sam Cassell role that Sam had with that championship. Like, oh, my God, I'm all over the place. That championship Celtics team from 08. I think he'll Jao be out there just to go get buckets. And I think, you know, he's primed to have another sixth man of the year type of season.
I like both guys, but I'm going to go with you, Corey. I already kind of know what Lou Williams is going to do. I know he's going to definitely get the minutes he's going to need to score for the Clippers. I like Sam Dekker, and I like what he can do, and I like the fact, like you mentioned, Jack, it's the first time they even really have a good young player in quite some time. Not saying Sam Dekker is going to be ever an all-star type, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Doc Rivers gives him minutes because he could be a nice fit with this roster. Let's talk wins, though. Best-case scenario for the Clippers next year.
I mentioned at the start of the pod when we were talking about the rankings that I think they can get as high as a fourth seed. That's all things going well. You know, health, which I don't think is going to happen. But I think they can get as high as, you know, 47, 48 wins and that fourth seed. But, you know, we mentioned in all these Western Conference teams podcasts that the West has become so stacked. But at the same time, one of those teams isn't going to outperform their expectations, whether it's the Timberwolves, whether it's the Thunder, whether it's the Jazz, whether it's the Blazers. One of those teams is going to have injuries. I mean, it's likely to be the Clippers, but who knows? They might buck the trend and actually become a team that maintains some health and actually has some consistency throughout the year.
Now, I think best case scenario is probably 47 wins, and that's absolute best case scenario, and that's me probably never throwing shame at anyone on this organization ever again.
That ain't happening.
Thank you. I'm glad you could tell.
I think best case is, you know, I don't know. I like talked myself out of even liking the Clippers at all this podcast with the roster turnover and all the Chris Paul hype. I guess I'm going to go best case scenario is like 48 wins. You know, everything goes right. They find a way to play Gallinari and things just kind of work out. But I really don't see it happening. And I think highest seed they could probably get is sixth. I mean, I have a couple teams definitely locked in to be better than they are in terms of talent and then just not having the type of roster turnover. So I think a more likely scenario, which I'll say later, is more of like a 8th or 7th seed, but worst case scenario.
Worst case is that things could really blow up, you know. Griffin and Gallinari might use their fists again for some reason other than, you know, using for basketball purposes. They could get into a brawl, DeAndre becomes the Clippers' number one guy, and, you know, all hell breaks loose and they miss the playoffs. But I don't see that happening. I think they can still scrape in. I think their actual prediction, which we'll get to, I think as low as they can get will be just out of the playoffs. Even then, because, you know, you look at the teams that we've mentioned earlier in other pods, like the Jazz, like the Blazers, I think they're slightly better than them. on paper, but there's a lot more volatility there on that roster as well, and with Doc as well added in to all of that.
Yeah, for me, I'm rolling with worst case scenario being, you know, 38 wins, and that's his team, you know, being hampered with injuries, because I do think someone will get hurt at some point in the season. I'm not sure for how long, but, you know, if Blake Griffin was to miss, you know, 30 games, this team is probably going to lose about 20 of those 30 games.
Yeah. I think the injury thing, you know, Gallinari and Blake both have missed significant time in the past. So that'd be something to keep an eye on for me. I have the same number, Corey. Worst case, 38 wins. And then, you know, maybe they just don't find anything that really works at the point guard position, because we're not talking about, you know, Pat Bev's a good 3-and-D point guard, and Milos, we don't really know what we're getting with him, and Austin Rivers is, you know, inconsistent. So that point guard position and just playmaking overall from the guard position could be an issue for this team. But realistically, what do you think is going to happen next year with the Clippers?
I'm going to give them 43 wins, a 7th seed in the West, maybe a 6th. But I reckon they're good enough for a 6th to 8th position, you know, around that 43, 44 win mark.
Yeah, I'm rolling with 41 wins. I think that's about right, them going right around 500. I actually talked myself out of them being like fighting for an 8th seed. I thought they were going to be like a 6th seed a couple weeks ago. This podcast has really warped my views on the Clippers.
It tends to do that for you, Corey. I think you get into some weird mindset. Like I mentioned on previous pods, how I like hearing you positive and stuff, but there's the sadist in me that loves hearing you shit on players at the same time.
Some kind of dark witchcraft in this podcast room. I'm slowly being converted or something. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, you know, we haven't heard many positive takes in quite some time, but maybe we'll get a little bit more positive in the top 10. For me, though, win-wise, like you guys said, 42 to like a 44 win range, you know, grabbing one of those bottom seats in the West. I just have a hard time seeing this roster, you know, put it all together real quick, especially with the rest of the teams. Even a team that, like you mentioned, Jack, like the Jazz or the Blazers, who might not be as talented on paper, but they, you know, they've been together. They have some more, you know, team chemistry, and that's something that I think that could hurt the Clippers this year. But let's talk the truth. The emoji today for the Clippers for me, you know, Corey mentioned tombstones early on, and that's kind of what I wanted to go with my emoji. But since there isn't one, I'm going to have to go with the skull, just because yep. Lob City, the big three, it's dead. We're never going to see it again. And it just was kind of just a disappointment.
Yeah, I'm gonna do one of Corey's moves that he likes to do with the emojis, going with the double meaning one. So I've got the fist bump emoji, which could mean one thing. It could mean that, you know, Doc and Steve Ballmer deserve a fist bump from all the NBA fans because, you know, things have gone well. But on the flip side, the fist bump could also mean a punch because, you know, Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari like to punch people. So double meaning for me.
What about you, Corey?
I'm going with the emoji with the tape around his head because, like, he's hurt. Whatever it is, the bandage on the head. Because someone on this roster is going to go down. Until the core of this team is gutted, they will forever, to me, be the hobbled Clippers.
Yeah, I honestly, like, we didn't really talk about it much, but I was actually surprised they didn't hit the restart button this offseason. I guess, you know, Steve Ballmer, that was another one I could have went with the money because he spent so much money on the team, he wanted to stay competitive. But I think this would have been a good situation to maybe try to start a rebuild because, like, you lose Chris Paul, you could have easily let Blake walk. You could use the excuse of injuries, then maybe try to flip DeAndre for some assets and just go full rebuild. But they chose to, you know, try to remain competitive. But the problem is that they're never going to be in a situation where they can contend with this roster, most likely.
No, they won't. But I think Steve Ballmer doesn't seem like the rebuilding type. And he's invested quite a bit into this franchise already, acquiring them for something around like the $1.8 billion range. And there's talks that they want to go to a new stadium, get away from the Staples Center in 2024, I believe, or somewhere around that range. So Steve Ballmer wants to have even an average team that's fighting for playoffs, because at the end of the day, in this current climate with the Warriors, how close are you going to get anyway? So you'd rather have, you know, sell your tickets, you know, get some merch sales with players like Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. So, I mean, I can see why he did it. But alternatively, I don't think he wouldn't. It's not in his personality to go like Atlanta Hawks, Chicago Bulls style, full rebuild. I couldn't have seen it happening. I wasn't surprised that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I actually thought there was it was coming. I truly thought they were gonna let Blake Griffin walk if Chris Paul, you know, was dealt, and they, you know, obviously re-signed him for the max deal. So I was slightly surprised as well. I thought it was close to building. I thought they were just gonna blow it up, but you know, obviously Steve Ballmer, you know, that guy is a Clippers fanatic, and we haven't really mentioned him, but he's probably one of the only bright spots that I like about the Clippers is the fact that there's not many owners that are that energetic and emotionally involved in their own franchise like Steve Ballmer, which is really cool to see.
And you always see him. He's wild, too, when he's at the game.
It's like him and Cuban. They're like the two dudes that I love seeing.
Yeah. A lot of the guys, probably 10 owners. I don't even know what they look like in this league.
No.
Yeah. And from a player's perspective, I think you enjoy having your owner, you know, out there supporting you. So, I mean, I can see the point of that. But, like, the problem that I would say to him would be, like, you know, how are we going to get an elite talent at, you know, the guard or wing position? Because that's something we probably need moving forward. There's not really going to be a situation. I guess if they think they can make a move, I mean, they have some decent pieces, but no real young assets on this trade that they'd be able to kind of flip for some type of, you know, good guard player. What do you rank them 1 to 10?
Look, I'm going to give them a 5.5. I was thinking a 6, but again, you guys have got me all negative. So I'm going to look, they're average enough that I want to tune into these guys. I mean, it's not that I have to because, you know, I'm a Clippers writer for OTG, but I also like watching the Clippers play. I like Blake Griffin's game. Plus, you know, it could also be car crash TV where it's, you know, you want to see them fail at the same time. But, I was going to give them a 6. That's sort of, you know, above average, but I'll give them still slightly above average with a 5.5.
All right. I'm rolling with a 3. Why is that so bad?
That was a little harsh. I mean, they're still
almost.
I don't think they're going to be that entertaining to watch. I get they have a superstar, but having a superstar doesn't translate if your team's not going to. I just don't think they're going to click. I mean, I guess I'll raise it to a 3.5.
So, but.
And this is my league pass rating. This is just my opinion on them, their watchability. I just don't think they're going to be that watchable.
I don't know.
I think if the Clippers are, you know, any bit of good, they'll be a good offensive team because defensively they have some question marks too. So, I mean, I think they'll be, you know, better all around. And if they, you know, Doc Rivers, I think like Jack mentioned an article before, is, you know, trying to be more ball movement, that Chris Paul was a ball stopper. We'll see what happens. I think Blake and DeAndre are still pretty exciting. And just the fact that DeAndre can murder somebody on the court and kind of ruin their NBA career, Brandon Knight. But
This is my thought too, what you just said, Nick. I can catch that all in the highlight.
I guess. But, I mean, it's still – I'm going to give them a 5 out of 10. I can't be as ruthless as Corey, but I don't think they're as – you know, if they had Chris Paul in this game.
I don't think anyone can be as ruthless as Corey.
I'm sorry. Any team that's going to have Austin Rivers playing 30 minutes a game doesn't really deserve me to give him a 5 league pass rating at this point.
Yeah, Austin Rivers. He's coming for you, Austin Rivers. So.
Austin Rivers. Don't let Doc hear that.
Might get some drama right there. But you'd watch the Clippers over what TV show that you like?
All right. So I was mentioning car crash TV, stuff that you can't help but watch away. So – out here in the UK, there is a UK version, Newcastle version of Jersey Shore called Geordie Shore. There's a lot of drama, a lot of fist fights, a lot of binge drinking, a lot of hookups. It's basically like a TV show version of the Clippers team. So it works out well.
Man, I can't wait to fist pump till my arm falls off watching that.
Yeah. Fist bump, push up, chapstick.
I'm going with a show that's pretty near and dear to Nick's heart, and that's a Burn Notice. I know that Nick likes that show dearly.
I'm disappointed in you.
I know you're disappointed.
That wasn't burn.
It wasn't burn. I just got burned Michael Weston style.
That was an entertaining show. I mean, it was a USA original or whatever it was. It lasted, you know, 6-7 seasons, I think. You know, it was a good show, but it wasn't like a fantastic, like, Emmy or whatever awards they won type of show. which is kind of what the Clippers are. You know, they're not going to win any awards. So it's, yeah.
Damn, Corey. I don't know what I'm going to do when I see you this weekend, but.
I'm out. Not showing up.
Corey, get out of town.
I might have to pull some Mike Weston stuff on you. But for me, I guess I'm going to go with NCIS. You know, this is a show that I think is pretty good, but it's never been a show that I'm like, oh, I need to binge watch this on Netflix or I need to follow this plot line. It's kind of like one of those shows, you know, you're waiting for a ride, waiting to pick somebody up. You'll flick it on for 15 minutes and watch the rest of the episode.
Which version of NCIS, Nick? Because there are about 4 million of them. And one of them is LA.
All of them are about the same level to me, so none are a little any better than the other.
That's fair.
I agree. I love that sentiment right there. That's not a show I'm very fond of.
Yeah. We'll stick to Law and Order.
Yeah. Well, that wraps it up for the Clippers. You know, the little brother to the Lakers. Get some extra shade in there. So, you know, nobody's probably listening at this point.
Oh, anymore. The shade is so much so real right now. So much shade. Need that hoodie.
That hoodie mellow. But thank you, Jack. Thank you, Corey, for hopping on. As always, thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you give us a follow to OTG Basketball on Twitter. Also give us a subscription at iTunes. Have a great night, guys.
Ciao, guys.
No one egg my house, please.